Our world is always moving, so with Merrill Lynch, you can get access to financial guidance online, in person, or through the app. Visit ml.com and learn more about Merrill Lynch, an affiliate of Bank of America. Merrill Lynch makes available products and services offered by Merrill Lynch, Pierce, Fenner & Smith, Incorporated, a registered broker-dealer member SIPC.
My mission is simple, to make you money. I'm here to level the playing field for all investors. There's always a bull market somewhere, and I promise to help you find it. Mad Money starts now.
I'm Cramer. Welcome to Mad Money. Welcome to Cramerica. Other people want to make friends. I'm just trying to save you some money. My job is not just to entertain, but to educate and teach you. So call me at 1-800-743-CNBC or tweet me at Jim Cramer. If you listen to most commentators, every bull market is always one step away from the slaughterhouse, including this one. Every day is the last day of the bull. It's been that way for as long as I've been following the stock market. It's going to stay that way. Just a fact of life. Like, oh, when you get a day like today that repels the averages from double-digit gains, Dow dipping 62 points, S&P declining 0.67%, NASDAQ losing 0.82%, you're going to hear that the bull has died of exhaustion after a long, hard run. R.I.P., the bull, welcome the bear. So tonight, let's deconstruct the latest in a long line of bovine obituaries so we can put it all in perspective. That way, we'll understand what killed the bull yet again and how it can be resuscitated, which is what happens every time since I got in the money management business 37 years ago. Yep, bulls die all the time, but they rarely stay dead for that long. First, as I always tell you, if you want to know the key to the stock market, you have to know the key to the bond market, which is the benchmark 10-year treasury. I hate bonds. They're so boring, aren't they? I mean, you buy them, you get your money back. In the interim, collect a little income. It couldn't be more different from stocks. But from the day I walked in the door at Goldman Sachs in the early 1980s, all I heard was the bonds, the bonds, the bonds, the bonds, the bonds. You don't need to think. The bonds will tell you what to think. The total supplication before the bond market always revolted me. I do all my own homework. I interview hundreds of CEOs. I have the pace of business of so many companies. Yet somehow my brain is trumped by the bond market. Somehow I might as well check my mind at the door and just say, hey, what are the bonds saying? Sadly, the answer is yes, at least when it comes to the day-to-day behavior of the markets. Why should we trust bonds more than our own brains? A couple of reasons. First, bonds represent trillions of dollars of activity, much more money in the stock market. You ignore trillions of dollars of decision-making and firepower at your own peril. Second, because bonds are far more right than they are wrong, at least when it comes to the direction of the entire stock market. I say entire market because obviously if a company reports a remarkable quarter, it can swim against the bond tide. Takeover transcends bonds entirely. There are always individual exceptions. But as an asset class, stocks are often at the mercy of bonds. Today, bonds rallied hard, which means interest rates fell, signaling to everyone who follows the bond market, which is pretty much everyone who manages any sort of money, that we got a big slowdown ahead, which is going to come with a lot of deflation. And that's ultimately worse for the economy than inflation. That's the subtext. Now, we're all allowed to have our own interpretation of what's causing the bond market to lecture us like this. My view, I got a twofold explanation, and it isn't nearly as dire as the bond market might suggest. In fact, I think the bond market is prone to exaggeration. And today's one of those days when we're getting bond market hyperbole. First, bond buyers are transfixed by oil and it's plunged down today to 43. Holy, it was ugly. Naysayers believe oil couldn't be crashing into bear market levels, as it was today, unless there's a vast slowdown. I believe that's just plain wrong. Supply from this country is simply overwhelming demand, and that's how we went into bear territory. I also know that when oil was at $53 and looking like it was going to 60, we, with the help of Carly Garner, our commodities chartist, said it would go right to 43 in a heartbeat because there were way too many speculators betting the wrong way. Carly and I believe that a lot of those speculators are now being blown out, and while it is messy, I think it smells more like a bottom than a new top, even though it's that kind of bottom. Why? Because when everyone loved oil, we hated it. Now the haters are coming out of the woodwork. Now, down here. Yeah, that makes sense. Second round of deflation, Amazon. Today, Amazon announced some plan to take over fashion with a try at home and try it on at home and send back policy. I mean, I guess they're willing to bet that women won't buy clothes, wear them Saturday night, and then stuff them in a box and return them to Amazon. I mean, today's stress, tomorrow's the world. I don't know, who knows? We can laugh, but Amazon's rampage is now getting out of control. This company is now wrecking the price structure of everything the consumer buys. The whole consumer price index is being Amazon, and we're now at a moment where the Fed might need to acknowledge, wait a second, Amazon's mowing down inflation to the point where maybe we don't need to raise rates anymore. So what happens? What is this? What stems from that view? Oh, okay. What's on your screen? The stocks, the industrials go down because the bonds are saying slow down. The bank stocks get hit because the bonds are saying no rate hike. Tech stocks get pounded because the bonds say the economy isn't moving fast enough to bolster demand for tech. Oh, and the drug stocks go up because they do well when the economy decelerates. But how true is this story? Well, today it was certainly true. Today we're projecting all the bond market's thoughts onto our stocks. At the moment, they reflect the sum of all our deflation fears. Here's the issue, though. What happens tomorrow if oil rallies on inventories or the fears of Amazon get overdone, which I thought that happened today at the end of the day? What happens if the market decides to take stock in Red Hat, Adobe, and Federal Express, all of which rallied sharply after sharply better than expected results once the market closed? Oh, and can we just for a moment recognize that lower oil prices and lower consumer prices, it's good for the economy. I know, heresy, but true. Here's the bottom line. The bonds were a cruel taskmaster today. We can't ignore them. I mean, they're like, you know, we can't ignore the bonds, right? However, we must not be enslaved by them either. Today, stocks were manacled to bonds. Tomorrow, bonds could take us in another direction. Or they could be more positive about growth than they let on in this session. They do play it pretty close to the vest, you know. So I say don't ignore the bond market, but don't let it be your master. Common sense can always be a factor, too. Bud in Ohio. Bud.
Booyah, Ski Daddy. Thank you for taking my call.
Absolutely, Chief. What chicken?
Yesterday morning on Squawk Box, I heard Energy Secretary Perry waxing enthusiastic regarding exports of liquefied natural gas. It reminded me of a positive interview you had in February with Charisse Suki. But since that time, his new company, Tellurian, has fallen from $15 to about $10.
Yeah.
Would this be a good time to initiate a position?
Tellurian is acting like Tellurian. Okay, here's the problem. There's a lot of companies in this business now. I mean, we've done a lot of work on liquefied natural gas with our friend Rusty Brazil, and he says there's just too many. I mean, there are just coming out of the woodwork wanting to do this, so I think we got to take a pause. And plus, it's energy-related. And anything energy-related right now, people don't want to hear about it. That could change. But that's the way it is right now. I need to go to Alan in Ohio. Alan.
Hey, Jim Cramer, a big booyah to you from Willowick, Ohio.
Done the same way. What's up?
Hey, Jim, I wanted to get your thoughts on PBI, Pitney Bowes. You know, I think they're a good stock with solid dividends, but they've been riding the seesaw from $13 a share to $18 a share in the last year. Just wanted to know what your take is, Jim, on their
future.
We got
to get Mark Lawton back on. I don't want to put words in his mouth because I think that I've seen PBI do a lot of good things lately. A bunch of announcements that are very good about stamps. But you know what? We got to hear from the man himself because I think that this is an incredibly compelling story. But I need to know more before I make a judgment. Sure, we were impaired by bonds today. But that doesn't mean they're our only master. Pay attention. But don't be enslaved. On Mad Money tonight, IBM CEO Ginni Rometty. The CEO, Ginni Rometty, is certainly busy these days balancing reinventing one of the most iconic companies on Wall Street, also advising President Trump. Tonight I'm sitting down to see how she's managing to do both at the same time. Then the market's been on a tear so far this year. But is the move sustainable? I'm going to go off the charts to find out. And with more businesses focused on their online biz, can a company like Wix help you score some clicks? I'll surf with the CEO. Stick with Cramer.
Don't miss a second of Mad Money. Follow at Jim Cramer on Twitter. Have a question? Tweet Cramer. Hashtag Mad Tweets. Send Jim an email to madmoney@cnbc.com or give us a call at 1-800-743-CNBC. Miss something? Head to madmoney.cnbc.com.
All of the problems of the world could be settled easily if men were only willing to think.
From the early days, the color of progress was blue. But the next big ideas can come from even the youngest minds. Can Big Blue keep pace with modern innovation? and make the next century as strong as their first.
Earlier today, we got to talk with Ginni Rometty, the chairman, president, and CEO of IBM, who's reinventing her company in 21st century style while advising President Trump on how to do the same for the federal government. We discussed everything from IBM's cloud initiatives, commercialization of Watson, to Warren Buffett's sale of a big chunk of IBM stock earlier this year, and the company's multiple comebacks from adversity. Check out this two-part story of a leader in a challenging business at a challenging time from IBM's Watson Center in New York City. Ginni, I don't want to bury the lead. I'm long enough been a journalist. You were at the White House yesterday.
Yes.
What did you talk about? And what can IBM do for our country?
Yeah, well, look, this is part of a series of meetings we've had, actually, and they've been about modernizing the IT that is in our government. And there's so many opportunities. So it's about modernizing the systems, and we work in many of them. We do much work in DHS. We do work around things like the Veterans Administration. You might know that we're doing work there around helping our vets using Watson, actually sequencing the genome. But that wasn't what it was a day. It was a day not about what any individual company did. This is about what are ideas on how to modernize the workforce, modernize the IT that runs a country. And then I participate, and I've been quite focused on how for a country we have got to work on our skills and prepare not only this current generation, anyone for work, because all work's going to include technology. To me, it's the root of many issues in this country that has to be addressed, and it is the basic skills. We've got open jobs, and we need to fill them. So we've been working on that.
Okay, so when you tell the president that, I'm sure he says that's a very good idea. What's the follow-up? Has there been follow-up with IBM?
Yeah, I think there's been very good follow-up. And as you know, I know you've been out to see some of our Pathway to Technology schools.
Right.
So two big areas of follow-up that I'm optimistic about. One is last week you saw that the administration signed an order on apprenticeships to get that moving at scale. That is one really great way for public-private to come together, and we do that for students around the world and in this country. The second thing is that we've made a lot of great progress and will, in fact, be sponsoring a governor's meeting come this fall, which is this idea to scale ideas like Pathway to Technology schools that you were so gracious to host some of our students who graduated. But the idea is a six-year high school, we coined something called New Collar Skills of the Future, which is not white collar, not blue like you have on, but it is the new, fresh, contemporary skills. I mean, you're surrounded by folks and kids like this in many IBM centers around the world. And that idea is what we're working to scale that education across this country. And it's the simple idea, a six-year high school. You work with public high schools, help them with curriculum. Our employees are mentors. And we've now been at it several years. Great track record. We'll be at 50,000 kids by the end of next year. It is a solvable problem.
All right, so
that's what the discussions were about.
I think that's true, but I look around here and I think of old school image of IBM versus what you've done, particularly with the 6 year. And I think that it would be great to hear from you what is the new IBM, since IBM has repeatedly invented itself. Lots of people have bet again and again that it can't,
yes,
but it's doing it right now. I'm looking at it. Tell me about it.
Yeah, look, what makes IBM to me one of America's greatest technology companies is it's not reinvented itself once, not twice, three, four, five, six times, and that is what we are right in the middle of right now. And for this era, it's the era where the technology is around cloud, around cognitive, our word for AI. There's a reason we call it cognitive. It's about augmenting what you and I do so we can do what we're supposed to do our best. And then that's the IBM that takes that technology and the know-how about how the world works and puts that together and actually changes business. We are the champion for business. And so what you see here is part of that, boy, $500 million a year in retraining. You were saying, Maya, look around some of the faces here. I said, well, Jim, 50% of IBM is millennials that are here. And these are contemporary working spaces that, of course, because if you're big, and people say, how can big companies be fast? You have got to modernize how people do that work. That means things. You're in the middle of a design thinking lab. That's take everything about you love about the consumer, ease of use, and put that in business. That's what design labs, we have 35 around the world, do. You're in the middle of one of them, an interactive studio. They work with clients, right? So the first city, Apple Watch, you name it, comes out of these places. So you change the design thinking. You'd put them on agile, which is co-location, right. Change the tools, multidisciplinary, minimum viable products, small teams, and then you give them contemporary tools, co-location. So that's what you're seeing here. And boy, we've been at that. We've done this to workspaces in 300 places around the world.
Okay, so as someone who's interested in the stock as well as the company and the institution, and it is an institution like no other, you have to turn the battleship around to some degree because the world's changed.
Yes.
And that means that at given times, analysts might say, well, wait a second, it's got flat revenues for a long time. Wait a second, it's got this legacy business. How do you deal with the legacy business and the strategic imperatives to make it so strategic imperatives is the big growth business without having the other business drop off?
Yeah. So a couple different things. One is, like I said, what we need to do is reinvent for every era. So when you do that, you do divestitures, you do acquisitions, you change, you introduce new products and services. So I wouldn't call it legacy. I mean, we are the incumbent. We are the one that hosts most of the world's processes, their data that's important. And if I had to pick one word that IBM's reinventing around, it's data. And we should come back to this point. And so
that's why you bought Weather, right?
Absolutely.
And it's just more data than most access data.
Actually, Weather, most people think we bought it just for the data. Okay. And Weather does impact. It is the number one influencer of everything. So the Weather Company, it is on every phone you touch, right, to get your weather. Every Apple phone will soon be on every Samsung phone. But what's under it is a wonderful Internet of Things platform. And so we do serious Internet of Things work with Watson and the Internet of Things. So elevators, Kony, Whirlpool, right, devices. We are all about...
Whirlpool what? To be able to make it so that a repairman knows what you have?
A repairman ahead of time knows what the issue is. So when he shows up,
the device doesn't have the device.
How many times has that happened, right? And so this is why we say IBM reinventing into the IBM cloud with Watson. It's together. It's why Watson will touch 1 billion people by the end of the year through these things. So whether it's through your appliance, through your elevator that's there. So just to frame back to your question about the reinvention, mm-hmm. right, when you said what is it and what is it the two businesses, they're not two businesses. These are the same clients, new products and services. So we help with one set of clients, the same client,
right.
the productivity we give them, and then reinvest into the new and the new products and services, which is around cloud, around mobility, artificial intelligence, security. And as you know, while they're called strategic imperatives, that's what those businesses are.
Right.
And they're in health, they're in financial services. And those have grown to be $34 billion, 42% of IBM, double digit, those products and services. And it's the same client. So every client comes to me and says, look, you got to help transition me. That's the other thing that makes us so different. We transition them from one era to the other. So our whole transformation is IBM to the next era, and then how to transform and transition our clients. That's where they need the help.
Now, on my Twitter feed, I said, please, questions for Ginny.
Yeah.
Two people said instantly, how can I use Watson? We had Bill Cobb on recently, who has done a remarkable job transforming H&R Block. Perhaps people don't realize that they may be using Watson.
That's right. And that is very much the case because many different things I'll come back to about it. But when you said H&R Block, so this tax season, so what did Watson do that makes it different than what I consider consumer AI? Consumer AI in your home, it's typically speech to text
right.
to a search.
Which has some value.
That's fine. That's great. That's great. But we deal in the enterprise world. So this is training Watson. Watson is trained in industries. What does underwriting do? What does a tax preparer do? What does a doctor do? What does a customer service agent do? What does a repair person do? And it helps them be better. And in fact, it helps them do their job, makes them be the best. So what you saw, I think H&R is a great one. So
yeah.
it actually touched all these consumers. And in fact, for H&R Block, it was the best NPS, Net Promoter Score,
right.
they've had. It was market share gain, first time in years for market share gain,
right.
all due to this. And it was Watson reading the tax code, then helping you with what would people like you do, and did you miss this? Did you miss
right.
that? Could you have made more money? And I have to tell you a funny side story. I can't tell you how many things we learned about the tax code, all the states and the federal, how many conflicting things there are, which we've turned into the government for some help them out there.
But I do feel that when you're with President Trump and 3-4% of our nation, of the federal government, is on the cloud. I mean, I felt like saying, I hope Ginny says that We could help the IRS, but then you'd
absolutely
be helping both sides.
We help both sides. But by the way, and we're a big cloud provider to the government as well, right? So, I mean, the cloud is a really important part of where we're going. But I have to tell you, the cloud is in its early stages and it's changing. And so when I mentioned about IBM reinventing for data, I want you to think of this. Any company out there, so we're the champion for business.
Okay.
20% of the world's data is searchable. Anybody can get to that 20. Okay. But 80% of the world's data, which is where I think the real gold is, mm-hmm. whether it's decades of underwriting, pricing, customer experience, a risk in loans, that is all with our clients. You don't want to share. That is gold. So I feel so many clients that ask for help on all this, this is what we do. And this is, I say, you go on the offense now. This is about what our role is to help you use that. And you're going to need artificial intelligence, but you're going to need one where Watson's differentiated, and we are trained in an industry, and more important than anything, Jim, you hear this from clients, it's artificial intelligence says you can't send all your data to someone else's cloud. You'll use some out there, some on, and we do the job of don't make you move it, because not all data can be moved. And the other thing we do, which I think differentiates us from everyone in this area of artificial intelligence, built for business, is that I can guarantee you as a customer that your insights, your personal data, is not training that data for someone else to use it. That's not true with others.
No, it's
and
not.
So that, to me, is really the game if you're an enterprise.
All right. Well, we're going to take a break for a minute. We're talking with Ginni Rometty, who is the chairman, president, and CEO of IBM. Thank you, Ginni.
Coming up, Cramer has more with IBM CEO Ginni Rometty. Does she think the Oracle of Omaha made a mistake by selling a big chunk of his IBM stock?
Is it a kind of a check that maybe I'm not delivering what some of these big investors want?
Mad Money will be right back.
Ginni, it's a remarkable story, but at the same time, it's not for everyone. We had Warren Buffett sell down the stock. It seemed like he said there's too much competition. He felt that the situation had changed since he came in. Is this both free to do more for you, or is it a kind of a check that maybe I'm not delivering what some of these big investors want?
No, look, I think, look, we've traded publicly 100 years out
right.
there. And the trick to being a company in tech, which is a viciously competitive
right.
environment, that's absolutely right, is you got to keep reinventing. And what IBM is for someone who values high value as a company. And so because we continue to divest some businesses, create new, move forward, Jim, it is always about moving to where the profit and the value is. And what that does for an investor is that always gives us the ammunition to reinvent ourselves. Those profits do.
Right.
And then with that, continuously raise your dividend. And so you will be there the next time and the next time and the next time, and you have the firepower to do that.
Well,
that, to me, is what makes us
speak,
valuable.
Well, did you speak to them about that? Because that's a very, to me, you get almost 4% yield.
Yeah.
You've got a fabulous balance.
Yeah.
You're generating a gigantic amount of cash.
Yeah.
I don't understand why he did so.
Well, I would let every investor speak for themselves, right?
Very
but
fair.
I'm very appreciative of all our investors there.
Okay. Now, let's talk about the dividend. You generate a gigantic amount of cash, even though you're making this transition to strategic imperatives. Can that be imperiled if the older business, I'm just calling it that, older business goes down, or strategic imperatives is so successful that you make less money on strategic imperatives than you would on the older business?
Yeah, so listen, this is an important point. They're not separate businesses.
Okay.
And in fact, a very interesting point of how we share with investors, it's part of every business we have. So they're different products and services as you reinvent them inside of each other. So that's one really key point that's here. And as we move to the new products and services, they are of higher value. I mean, that's always been IBM's business model. To higher value, and it's really, I think, the only way to exist 100 years. So others will get their chance to go through 2, 3, 4, 5
right.
renovations and reinventions. That's what makes us different.
Right, but let's talk about where you're way ahead. I look at patents. Some of these analysts say, oh, well, that's one off, but it's been a fabulous business. I look at blockchain, what you're doing there. I think
Absolutely.
Sometimes I envision that all of Bitcoin could run on IBM's blockchain. So talk about the businesses that you're so far ahead on and why. Maybe Wall Street's not giving you enough credit, but the people at home who are watching this show will understand.
Yes. So let me start with blockchain, and then I'm going to go backward to those patents because
sure.
that underlying it. To me, and there'll be another technology that comes. And again, greatness is having a technology, but the know-how to do something with it. So when I say blockchain, I don't mean Bitcoin. I'm not talking about a virtual currency. It's a really important point. And my simple definition of blockchain is it's a technology that allows you to exchange information, anything between two parties who may not know each other, but it's a trusted, I can do it with trust.
anything.
That's really all it does. So any exchange of anything, you could make trusted. That's how I think of it. And then you say, whoa, I could do lots of things, such as Walmart. So Doug McMillon and I are working on food safety. $100 billion a year on food safety on recalls wasted. And so in production in China, pork from farm to table, going. We've done mangoes. We're spreading it in with many other food producers. A simple example. Another one would be Maersk shipping, 20% of the world's shipping, cargo shipping. And so, boy, if you've ever seen the chain of information, the paperwork with a cargo to ship flowers, a big container, you know, for, that goes on a cargo ship, the paperwork costs more than just even the goods inside of it. And so, perfect example, and we're working on that. DTCC, an industry you know well, derivatives and financials, going up on a blockchain. I do it myself, my own financial ledger. So the it is endless. We have over 400 different, think of these though as applications.
Right.
So we build applications, can build them on anything. And then underneath it, I make it the analogies like the internet. The internet, what the internet did for communications, I think blockchain will do for trusted transactions. That's maybe an analogy that'll work. And then we work on that underlying fabric to make it so that it can do tens of thousands of things a second, not like some of the other versions out there. And we've been to plenty of the governments. For blockchain to really take off, the technology it's on, which, by the way, we've helped open source, so everyone can use it, it has to have permissioned access, meaning a federal bank has to be able to see certain things, et cetera. So it is trusted. So now I circle back then to your question of that's just an example, but back to the patents. That is not a one time.
Right.
So 24 years as of right now, we have been the number one patent producer. I am very confident number 25 will come along. And it was 8,000 patents in a year is what we just did. And if you even look at the last couple years, it's been, let's see, 5,000 patents in cloud, I think. We're almost 4,000 patents in artificial intelligence. And so we monetize and commercialize many of those, not all. And so for those, we may license others because we're prolific inventors.
Right.
We are the ones that woke up the AI world here,
right,
again. Blockchain, another. I said we've outsourced right. that, open sourced that in that case. And then there are times, you know, as we move out of businesses, we have this wealth of patents, then we license to people. PC. Semiconductor. I mean, you just look at the list, and to me, that is a wonderful thing to do. At the same time, back to that reinvention, we're moving to the next thing, the ability to share with others the N-1 behind it.
Right. Let's just, in the time we have remaining, just talk about you. This is not an easy mission to change. A lot of these younger people, that means there were older people who had to leave. You've had a very tough job, a very difficult transition. Stock's been tough. Isn't it just hard on you every day?
No. I mean, I look at, and I have been part of this company, as you know, it's been 36 years, actually. And it's in my DNA, and I think it's in IBM's DNA to keep changing, and this is just what you do. And I tell you the part that does not make it hard. There is not a day that I don't talk to 5 clients, 10 clients, and it is what we do to keep the banks, the airlines, the railroads running in this world, and to take them to the future. If there's nothing as motivating as that, and I believe we'll do our part to change healthcare, right? When you think of new IBMers, 10,000 in healthcare I have, and we are making progress. By the end of this year, boy, with Watson, 20,000 cancer patients. We will be able to address, diagnose, and treat 80% of the what causes 80% of the cancer in the world. If that's not motivating, I don't know what is.
All right, so the last thing, I have two daughters, and they say, Dad, why don't you ever put women executives on? Why don't you have enough why aren't there more CEOs on? There are women. What are you doing? You're not making enough calls. I have to tell you, there are not enough women CEOs, as you know. Why is that? Because you are a role model for 51% of the country. How do we change this?
Yeah, this is an important, and I tell you, one of the most important things I think we all have to do is I've worked on this problem, and I agree with you, there are not enough. You've got to keep women in the workforce, whether it's through having children, caring for elder parents, all the things. And not that husbands and spouses or partners don't do those things too, but it's often what takes them out. And then to get them back in is hard. So we've done a lot of things, whether it's as simple as if someone has a baby, wants to keep working, we ship their breast milk to where the mother's traveling, right, to the baby. I mean, you keep them in the workforce, your odds are much higher. And that's just one of the many things we do.
And this is not a stranger to you. It wasn't like you were born today. You've had not as easy a life as many people think. You don't talk about, but it's true.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I say the other thing I learned, and it's really about our whole talk today. I learned from my mom, do not let someone else redefine you. And this goes back to when I was young, my father left, and he left my mom with four of us, and no money, no house, no food. And my mom really, without a college degree, went back to school, showed us, hey, this is not going to end like that. And every one of you are going to have a chance. She went back to school, got a job, got us through school. And I say my brothers and sisters are more successful than I am. And so this is that idea, do not let someone else redefine you, like don't let someone else redefine your company.
Well, I think that's important because a lot of people, you know, I've got almost 4% yield, got good growth. People would define you as a company that is not on the move, that is static, and that is certainly not what I'm hearing at all.
Couldn't be further than the truth, right? This IBM will change the world one more time.
All right. Thank you so much, Eugenio Rometty, who's the IBM's chairman, president, and CEO. Great to talk to you.
Thank you. Thank you, my friend.
So far in 2017, this market's had a phenomenal run. But how much longer can the momentum continue? Are the bonds, which we said at the top of the show, are saying, look out, you're entering the danger zone, telling the truth that stocks should be lower? I think it's a really important question, especially in light of today's sour action, which is why tonight we're going off the charts with the help of Larry Williams, the legendary technician who's been trading futures, commodities, and stocks for over half a century, in order to shed some light on the issue. Williams is a nearly mythical figure in this business. He's created a host of technical indicators. We look at them all the time, many of which are named after him, written nearly a dozen books. He's even got his own website, ireallytrade.com. So when Williams tells us that this market is due for a pullback, well, I think I'd give him full attention. What exactly makes him think that stocks could be poised to go lower? First of all, just to be clear, Williams does not believe we're headed into a bear market. I want to make that point. But there's a very important pattern that makes him think that a meaningful decline could be looming in the not-too-distant future. His reasoning has to do with what's known as the decennial pattern theory. It's an idea that was introduced back in the late 1930s by Edgar Lawrence Smith, economist, author, and money manager, who popularized the idea that stocks were better long-term holdings than bonds. Yes. According to Smith, the stock market tends to follow a 10-year pattern. That's what decennial means. For example, if you count from the beginning of the fiscal year for most firms, which is in October, not January, the market tends to go lower in years ending 3, 7, and 10, while it often goes higher in 5, 8, and 9 years. I know what you're thinking. That sounds about as reliable as investing based on your horoscope. But the truth is that the decennial theory has had a lot of success. Otherwise, a rigorous guy like Larry Williams wouldn't take it seriously. We wouldn't be talking about it. With that in mind, take a look at the daily chart of the Dow Jones Industrial Average, which also includes the decennial forecast for the Dow, where it's likely to go if the 10-year pattern holds true. Based on both the decennial pattern and the seasonal pattern down at the bottom, Williams believes we're due for a short-term pullback starting this Friday or next Monday. Okay, right there. And while he thinks his pullback should be brief, Williams also says that it will be an harbinger of a much larger down move to come. Specifically, based on the decennial forecast, he expects the Dow to start declining. See what you have. Look, here's the Dow, okay, for real in late July, with the pain kicking off somewhere between the 20th and the 25th of July. So you probably don't want to get back from the beach, okay? Roughly a month from now. And if this pattern holds true, we could keep falling through November. And obviously if it comes true, it's obviously going to be a lot of pain. But this, and this is a big but, Williams insists this decline will not mark the start of a bear market, even though it's pretty hideous. It doesn't mean we're headed into a recession either. In fact, eventually he expects we'll get oversold, which will ultimately lead to a bounce. That's because the real cause here is the 10-year pattern. Again, that may sound ridiculous to you, but you know, look at how closely the Dow has followed the decennial forecast so far this year. Here's the forecast, okay? Look, it's always been ahead. It always tells you what's about to happen. And when the forecast said we should rally, we rallied. When it said we should trade sideways, we traded sideways. Now it indicates it will soon be due for a sizable decline. And Williams thinks we got to take that real seriously. So I am, if Williams is. If you see it coming, you'll be able to take advantage of the lower prices, do some buying, rather than panicking, getting shaken out exactly the wrong time. Of course, you don't have to believe in any of this thesis, but I'm trying to present everything. Let's say you don't take it seriously. Now, let's take a look at the chart of the Dow and the decennial forecast from last year. See how closely the market followed this pattern? Look at this. Here's the forecast, okay? And here's the market. You can't dismiss it, right? I mean, it's just too powerful a 10-year pattern.
However, as Williams points out, while this technique is excellent at timing, it doesn't predict the magnitude of these moves. It might be a mild decline. And, of course, the decennial pattern might always be wrong. But here's the bottom line. The charts as interpreted by Larry Williams suggest the market could get slammed later this summer. I don't know if he's right, but regardless, after an ugly day, I just want you to prepare for the possibility. That way, if we do get hit, you won't be surprised like everyone else, and you'll be able to take advantage of any potential chaos because it does not signal a bear market. All right, stay real quick. It is time! It's time for the Lightning! Three votes about Robert Rose. One of them says, I'm sorry, 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 and then the lightning round is over. Are you ready, Steve? That is time for the lightning round. Clear. I'm going to start with Steve in Georgia. Steve!
Booyah, Kramer!
Booyah, Steve!
Calling about Carvana.
Man, that one just came public, I think. I don't know Carvana. Cut me to the quick there. We have to be able to work on Carvana. Let's go to Jeremy in Rhode Island. Jeremy!
Hey, booyah, Jim. First time caller here. Love the show. Love the big
Thank
fan
you.
Here.
Thank you.
I wanted to get your thoughts on AK Steel and where you thought it was heading.
Yeah, look, it's a decent spec, but you know I like Nucor. Nucor, I know, pre-announced, but I think we're going to get some very good news out of the White House soon. Makes me say that Nucor's a buy right here, right now. Let's go to Andrew in California. Andrew!
Hey, Jim. Hey, booyah, buddy.
Okay, partner, what's going on?
I want to ask you, you know, I paid attention to what you were saying yesterday, and I want to ask you about Smart and Final. Right now, it's trading at a 73 PE, twice that of Walmart and Costco, and they lost money in the last quarter due to competitiveness. Do you see that going to zero in the next few years?
I can't say that because they've been around for a long time. Because I used to go there when I lived out there. But I have to tell you, it's the kind of stock that is just going to keep going lower because everyone's decided that Amazon's going to destroy everything, including Smart and Final. I don't think it's going to happen, but it's going to keep going lower. Mark in Wisconsin. Mark!
Jim, what's your thoughts on SEM Group, ticker symbol SEMG?
All right, I was going over with my group today for ActionAlertsPlus.com, and it literally is, I mean, I'm not kidding. Anything in this sector, anything, oil, pipeline, people just want to sell. I'm not getting away of it. It's got a 7.4% yield, but I'm not going to get away of it because I know they're going to go lower for a bit. Let's keep our powder dry. Jim in Washington, Jim.
Jim, hey,
Jim.
How are you doing?
All right, how about you?
Good. I was just wondering because I put a boatload of money into AUPH. I was just wondering, do you think it's still a buy or a sell, or what do you think?
That's a Canadian pharmaceutical. I got to do more work on any biotech from Canada. Those are always the toughest to know about. Let's go to Gerald in Connecticut. Gerald!
Hey, Kramer, how you doing?
All right, how about you?
Good. I'm looking at Cara Therapeutics.
I like a local company for you, Connecticut. We had them on. I think that their anti-itch medicine and their blood-brain barrier work is really superior to everyone. I reiterate, it's a buy. And that, ladies and gentlemen, conclusion of the Lightning Round.
The Lightning Round is sponsored by TD Ameritrade.
What do you do with the once red-hot tech stock to pull back pretty substantially in recent weeks like a lot of the others? Whole tech edifice getting slammed earlier this month. Consider the case of Wix.com, long one of my favorites, the cloud-based web design company that helps individuals and small businesses create their own websites. Here's a stock that's rallied more than 58% year-to-date, but it's down a quick $8, 79 to 71 over the past couple weeks. You know the market's been tough. Could this pullback be a long-awaited buying opportunity? When Wix reported last month, the company posted some impressive revenue growth, 51%. Its earnings loss a little bit wider than expected, but more important, the company raised its full-year guidance, yet the stock's now below where it was trading before the quarter. To me, that seems enticing. Don't take it from me, though. Let's talk to Avishay Abrahami. He's the co-founder and CEO of Wix.com. Get a better sense of how his company's doing, where it's headed. Mr. Abrahami, welcome back to Mad Money.
Hey.
Good to see you, Avishay. Good to see you. Have a seat. Now, this sign-ups, 2 million a month, 6 million registered users this quarter, 11% people taking the upsell. I mean, this is a halcyon time for Wix.com.
It is a super fascinating time, right? We see a huge growth everywhere we are, and we see that in the United States, outside the United States.
But it's not tapped out. I mean, one of the things when I first saw it, I said, they must have everybody. but you have a fraction.
Well, apparently, right? Apparently, we're still adding about almost 2 million every month, right? And it seems to be growing, not shrinking. So, yes, I think there's a huge amount of people that still need to move their business on the internet, move what they do to the internet. 50% of the small businesses in the United States don't have a website.
That's incredible.
Yet.
Now, I think there's some really interesting data which shows that if you use, let's say, two almost identical places, one uses a Wix website and one doesn't. It says other website. The most important thing is where you are in Google.
Yeah.
How come Wix comes up so often?
Well, so one of the things we did now is that we released something called SEO Wizard. So it helps you optimize
SEO
for Google.
SEO Wizard.
Yeah, so search engine optimization, right? So statistically, what we found out is that people that actually went on and completed that SEO Wizard, 65% of them will be within a couple of months on the first page on Google. That's an incredible statistic.
But you don't charge for that.
No, that's part of our offering. That's free.
So what do I get if I pay up? I mean, what more do I need?
So basically, you know, all the commerce, all the business management tools will cost money, connecting your domain to having your own branding. But even that, you know, it's tens of dollars. It's not $1,000 a month.
Now, if Jack Ma's here, he's saying, listen, everybody in America should sell on Alibaba. But we don't know. We go to Wix, set up a site.
Well, my belief is that you probably want to control your brand. You want to be able to drive your customers. You want to create an environment where you can actually talk to your customers, right?
Right.
And to do that, Wix is the perfect solution.
Okay, so how about this new video initiative, which to me, as someone who owns a restaurant, owns an inn, I mean, I think it's a natural. I always want to show people the rooms. Always want to show people the way that the dishes are made.
Well, so this is something new that we released. And
this
we actually seen that, yes, this has just happened. And we actually see that it's growing super fast. We're really excited about it. Users are incredibly creative. We see education things happening around. We see people that are building, like, recipes or training, right?
Well, important. I look at people who do makeup, and I look at people who cook, and they give it away on Google. They make nothing. But people would pay if they had their own site. This is going to give them the ability.
Exactly. And you're actually talking about a lot of things that we're seeing now. We have users that came from YouTube, moved to Wix, started to ask subscription from their crowd, right? Some of them make over $10,000 a week just by doing that.
Someone
that money
is making $520,000 a year for what? Putting their
videos that used to be on YouTube for free. They're putting them now in YouTube and then asking for subscription, right? For people to come and consume those videos.
Okay, so let me ask you, why is Facebook not doing what you're doing? Why is Google, why aren't they trying to put you out of business?
Well, I think that it's a completely different philosophy, right?
Yeah,
Google helps you find things on the internet. Facebook helps you communicate with people, right? And I think that YouTube is kind of with different things with Google because they also allow you to share your content.
Right.
But their business model is they're finding a video, right? And then, and this is a way for you, I think, as a Wix user to market yourself. Put some video out there, build a website with a lot of content, and then you actually drive traffic from YouTube to you.
But it's important to know that people, your collections grew by 51% year over year, 114 million. But that does not include video yet. That just started the video initiative.
Yes. We just started the video initiative, and we're seeing that it's growing really, really well.
And now tell me about marketing for millennials. Wonder Woman, whom my kids know.
Yes, yes. So we did the Super Bowl, of course, with Gal Gadot.
You did the ad.
Yes, the ad.
I
Super
thought that was
Bowl,
good.
It was very good, actually.
Yeah.
It was kind of different because it was two people fighting and, you know, somebody being really creative about how he recovers from a disaster happening in his business. It worked very well, and we see that people actually realize that we're trying to say, and that Wix is an amazing way for you to quickly, easily create a professional
website. You
think
I look like Jason Sacramento?
I think that there's some stuff.
Honestly,
that, some stuff.
Yes. Okay, I just want to make sure.
Stuff.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. I lost my train of thought. Go ahead.
and now we're doing something with Karlie Kloss, which is a supermodel that represents beyond modeling, right? She's a coder. She has code with
Karlie. She's a coder.
Yeah, she actually knows how to write code. She learns that. She has a degree.
So what is she doing?
She's finishing
her
degree.
Is she teaching?
She actually codes herself. But beyond that, she has this incredible initiative where it's called Code with Karlie, where she teaches women how to code and use computers. And that's brilliant, right? So for us, our values and Carly's values are so well aligned that we love
it. How did she come to you? Tell me about the evolution of how that she found Wix. Or is it that everybody finds Wix? Because that's what I'm trying to... I mean, I found Wix because I own these things. It's like, I didn't know how to do it. People know to go to Wix. It is true. How do people know to go to Wix?
Yes,
I mean, like, I asked, like, young people. That's what I did.
Right.
I said, how do you make a website? I went to some people who were on Etsy. How do you make a website?
And they all go to Wix, right?
Right.
And so this
who else is the other guy?
So today there's a lot of smaller platform, mostly in the United States, local, like Squarespace and would be one, Weebly would be another.
Right.
But I think that the technology gap between us and them is so huge.
But this is also worldwide. I mean, I need people, you have to tell people you're in a lot of countries.
Yeah, we are selling in 190 countries. We're global, they're more a bit localized.
Wow, I've got to tell you, I mean, it does not include any of that. Just explain to people the upsell model so that they understand that you get, so, you know, again, so how you make money, because people say they've heard free, free, free. How about pay, pay,
so
pay?
So it's actually true. You can come to Wix and build a website for free.
I know.
Okay.
I was
and
shocked.
Then when you start, and then when you start to use more of business features, right? You want to have e-commerce. You want to have a way for people to book your services. This is where we charge.
But what do you charge per month for the?
So
limited?
Like about for the unlimited, so $15, $20. That's probably the most that somebody would pay to run their full business on top of Wix.
And you can make enough money like that.
Well, there's a lot of people in the world.
Right.
Yeah, that's one
of
the things.
A lot of people in the world. I like that. I like that optimistic. Now, you're doing so well since I saw you last. I mean, I don't know how many more you've added, but it is incredible. And the stock's been a rocket ship, as it should be. And I don't know. Look, there's a pullback. What can I say? The stock's up 58%. Nothing wrong there. That's Avishai Abrahami. He's the co-founder and CEO of Wix.com. Look, it's what people use. Stick with Kramer. I like to say there's always a bull market somewhere. I promise I'll try to find it just for you right here on Mad Money. I'm Jim Kramer. See you tomorrow.